Everyone who cruises has heard the rumors. Just rumors. Sure, just rumors, but what the hell else are they going to be? The man said irritably. It can take 5 years for a piece of news to go from one end of space to the other, and the story's going to change in the telling. So you don't listen to the story, you listen to the pattern. And right now, the pattern is weird fucking shit going on with the flow. The guilds know about this then. The man looked at Mars like he was an idiot. They don't want to know. A ship goes in the flow and doesn't come out, and they say, oh, pirates got them before they could report in, or there was some problem shaping the bubble inside the flow, and they just disappeared in it. There's always an explanation that doesn't mean the flow is the problem. They don't want to believe it. And if they don't believe it, then who's going to tell the interdependency? You? Me? Like they're fucking going to believe us. They might. Well, you try it and let me know. What I'm going to do is go home. I got kids. I want to see them again. There was a thump, and the shuttle landed in the Yes Sir's Bay. You're not worried that something might happen to this ship on the way out, Mars said while they waited for the air to be pumped back into the bay. I figure this ship is safe. I didn't want to hang around after that. Why not? My friend on the Telmies heard that this stream, the one out of end, is getting shaky. How so? How do I know? It's a rumor, man. They don't come up with a science report, but my friend is anxious about it. He even considered jumping ship and coming with us. But the Telmies' whole crew is grounded for legal depositions, and he didn't know where to get reliable forged IDs. It's hard to fool the biometrics. I've heard. The man nodded. So he's stuck. He's worried he's going to be stuck here forever. There are worse places to be stuck than End, Mars said. The man snorted at this. An open planet is no place for humans. Give me a decent ring habitat any day. Earth was an open planet, and we left it. The door to the shuttle opened, and the new crew began to file out. What's your friend's name? Mars asked the man. The one on the tell me. Why, you gonna send him a condolence note? I might. The man shrugged. Sho Tinuin, and I'm Yard Bren, in case you're at all curious. Christian. No, I'm with the Interdependent Church, mostly. Bren shuffled off before Mars could correct the confusion. An hour later, Mars had what passed for an orientation and was assigned his quarters, a tiny, sealable bunk in a room with 15 other crew members. Each crew member had their own bunk and locker with a common lavatory and living space, the latter of which couldn't possibly fit all 16 of them at the same time. As the newest crew member, he got the worst bunk, the highest of four nearest the lavatory, at the same altitude where the lavatory fumes gathered. Mars slipped into his bunk area, which had barely enough room to sit up, and connected his tablet to the ship's system. There was already a message waiting for him, informing him where to report to his new superior and when, the latter being a half hour from then. Mars opened up an app that would allow him to text anonymously and securely and pinged Vrenna. This is your friend Christian, he texted. I already said goodbye to you. Now you're ruining the moment, Vrenna responded. Mars smiled at that. I need you to look up someone, a man named Sho Tinuin. He crews on the Tell Me Another One. I need you to do it before the Yes Sir hits the flow shoal. All right. Why? Because he's heard a rumor about that thing I'm interested in. I love it when you're vague. Particularly the thing I'm about to deal with. Vague enough? Perfectly. Good. It would be helpful to know where he heard the rumor. It's a very weirdly specific thing to have a rumor about. I'm on it. How is the ship? I'm in a bunk the size of a dresser drawer. Jealous? All I have is my massive bed back at the palace in a room the size of a small village. I hate you. Hate you too, Christian. Be safe. I'll ping the ship with a message when I get news. Thanks, and here Mars almost typed sis, but stopped and just added a period instead. Then he turned off his tablet, sealed up his bunk, and spent a few minutes in the uncomfortably close dark, having the first twinges of homesickness. Chapter 11. You said you wanted to be informed if something unusual happened on our way out of End, Captain Tomi Blinica said to Kiva. They were 2 days out from End, and another day out from the flow shoal that would have them heading toward Hub. Kiva and Blinica were in the captain's private room, off the bridge of the Yes Sir, along with the chief of security, Noobt Pinton. The room could comfortably fit two people tops, and Pinton was exceedingly large. Kiva felt like she could actually taste his sweat particles. "What is it?" she asked. Blinica activated a tablet and showed it to Kiva. It featured a live feed of the Yes Sir's position in space, along with the logarithmically mapped position of other objects and ships within a light minute of distance. "We've got a ship coming toward us." "Toward us or toward the shoal?" "Us. We plotted its course, and it's going to intercept us in about 14 hours. When we first saw it and saw its course, I made the assumption it was also running to the shoal and just wasn't paying attention to our position. I boosted our velocity by 0.5% to get us clear of each other. They didn't respond immediately, but over the last couple of hours, they've boosted their own velocity to match ours. We're definitely the targets." "So, pirates?"
"Yes."
"Stupid pirates." The best time to nab a ship was when it was exiting the flow, not trying to get to it. Inertia would send a target ship into the flow shoal regardless. Pirate ships were usually relatively small, relatively fast, and almost always local, which is to say, with no equipment to shape a time-space bubble around their ships. If they entered the flow, they'd die. A pirate attacking an outgoing ship would likely have only a very small window of time to attack successfully, board, unload cargo, and disengage.
"Stupid, or they have a plan we don't understand."
"We can handle them, right?" The Yes Sir came with a full complement of defensive weapons and a small contingent of offensive weapons as well. The offensive weapons were technically illegal for a trade ship to have, but fuck that. When you're in space, sometimes you have to shoot first and lie about it to a guild inquiry later. "The ship is too far away to get a good look at its true capabilities, but if the thrust signature is correct, it's a Winston-class freighter. It's probably modified all to hell, but no matter what, they're still small, which limits their offensive capabilities. We can probably handle them if their intention is to pirate the ship."
"What other intention would they have? They want to invite us to tea?"
"We don't know. Right now, our posture is to watch and monitor." "You can outrun them to the shoal. Power up now."
Blinica shook his head.
"The second we boost velocity more than trivially, we give away that we know we're being tracked. They'll boost as well, probably to intercept earlier. If we plan to outrun them, we do it as late as possible, and when they're close enough for us to target with those missiles we're not supposed to have. But again, that's if they are attempting the usual piracy."
Kiva found herself getting irritated.
"What the fuck would unusual piracy be in this case?"
"We don't know, and that's the point. They're coming at us from the wrong direction, and they wouldn't have enough time to fully unload, even if they didn't have to burn time fighting us. But they should also know that we don't have anything worth stealing right now. Pirates have spies at stations who give them information about ships and their cargo manifests. It's how they decide who to target. But they wouldn't even have to be crafty to know that the only cargo we took on at End was people, since we didn't make a secret of that. And unless they really want Haverfruit concentrate, we have nothing of value. They know we have nothing they want or can use, and they're coming at us anyway."
"Yes, this is what worries me."
Kiva nodded. "Fine, what's the second thing?"
"One of our passengers is acting strangely," Noobt Pinton said.
"All our passengers are rich assholes," Kiva said. "Acting strangely is part of their so-called charm."
Pinton smiled slightly at that.
"I will take the lady's word for that," he said. "However, in this case, the problem is not the passenger being eccentric, but the passenger methodically casing the ship."
Pinton picked up his own tablet and sent video to the one Kiva was holding. In the video, a man was walking through the ship corridors, looking around.
"Oh my God, this man is walking! Let's kill him!" Kiva said.
"It's not that he's walking. It's where he's walking. He's not wandering the ship randomly or generally. He's going to areas relating to engineering, propulsion, and life support management."
"So
Only to those places?
No, Pinton said. He goes other places as well, but these are the places he's come back to. He doesn't come in far, and he never stays long, but he comes back.
Why don't you have the passengers on a fucking lockdown? Kiva asked, setting down the tablet. We don't need these assholes wandering the ship anyway.
That was our original plan, and, in fact, our passengers have already been given a list of areas they are absolutely not allowed to go into.
Which this guy ignores.
No, but he's come close. But he's not focused, say, on engineering directly. He's focused on places on the ship where it might be easy to disrupt engineering systems.
Which brings me back to my first fucking question, Pinton.
Pinton waggled the tablet he held in his hand. We didn't lock them down entirely because one of our crew recognizes this man, and we wanted to see what he might be up to.
Which rich asshole is he?
That's just it. The crew person says he's not a rich asshole. He's someone who works for a rich asshole.
Which crew member said this?
A new person named Christian Jensen. I understand you know him.
And who does he say this dude worked for?
Grenny Nohamapitan.
Get him in here, now, Kiva said.
So, I used to work for the family of the Count of Clermont, Jensen began.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Kiva said exasperatedly. Lord Mars, everyone in this room knows you're you.
I wasn't sure, Mars said.
Well, now you are, so get on with it.
Mars nodded. I didn't have a lot of contact with Lord Grenny, but I'd seen him sometimes at court functions at the Duke's, and other events and parties where the presence of a noble was considered a plus. Grenny was one of those nobles who would travel with an entourage of friends and employees. He pointed at Pinton's tablet. This was one of the employees, former military, working for Grenny as a bodyguard.
You're sure about that?
Blinica asked Mars.
I'm sure, Mars said. Vrenna pointed him out to me once. He and she were in the same unit for a while. Said he was a competent soldier, but a shit human being, and that at one point she nearly fed him his testicles because he kept propositioning her in the barracks. Every time I saw him since, I imagined his own balls in his mouth.
That's a lovely image, Kiva said.
When I saw him in the passenger ring section, I checked in with security. Mars nodded to Pinton.
I assume this asshole is traveling on fake documents, Kiva said to Pinton.
Yes,
Pinton confirmed.
For our records, he's Tezu Guko. Bear in mind we gave him that particular fake identity, so we can't really hold it against him. But he presented himself as a franchisee of the House of Sykes when he came to us. Name of Frin Klimta.
Is there a real Frin Klimta?
Maybe. We didn't check. We didn't believe you cared, ma'am, as long as their money was real. And it was.
Kiva turned to Mars. What's this asshole's real name?
His personal name is Chat. His family name, I think, is Ubdal, or Utal, one of the two.
Any idea why he's here?
I have no idea, Mars said. But if he came to you with an already fake identity, I think that's enough for you to be suspicious.
When did he book passage? Kiva asked Pinton.
Just before we left. He was one of the last people we booked. Magnut charged him a late fee of 250,000 marks.
Kiva pointed at Mars. So that would have been after you were kidnapped.
Mars nodded. Yes.
He one of the guys who grabbed you?
No, I definitely would have remembered that.
So he doesn't know who you are right now?
I don't know. Probably not. He hasn't responded to me yet.
But he would recognize you out of this disguise.
Yes.
Kiva reached over to Mars, grabbed his hair, and tugged. Mars yelped in pain and surprise.
Stop it! It doesn't just come off! You have to dissolve the glue.
Where is this asshole now? Kiva asked Pinton.
He's in the passenger ring section, Pinton replied. What do you want to do?
I want to find out what he's up to.
The yes, sir, is underway, Blinica reminded Kiva. Whatever you plan to do, I have to approve. I don't want this asshole damaging the ship.
It'll be fine, Kiva promised. She turned back to Mars. So, this asshole is a Marine.
Was a Marine, yes. Is now a bodyguard.
You think you could take him?
What?
No. Does this asshole know that? Yeah.
Okay, good. They waited until Chat went on a walk, and then positioned a couple of security crew at the end of a corridor they knew he was casing, giving every appearance of just having a conversation with each other. Chat saw them, decided to consult his tablet about something, and then headed back in the direction which he had come from to find two other security crew there. He stopped and appeared to be calculating his odds when Mars stepped into the corridor, his Christian Jansen disguise removed, and walked toward him. "Hello, Chat," Mars said. And that was as far as he got before Chat materialized a blade out of fucking nowhere and rushed directly for him, and then was on the floor half a second later, twitching, three stun bolts in him.
"Did you pee yourself?" Kiva asked Mars 10 seconds later when the all-clear had been given.
She and Pintan had been waiting a bit down the corridor and had been watching through the corridor camera, feed piped into a tablet.
"Maybe a little," Mars admitted, looking at the downed Chat, who was now being bundled up by security.
"There's no shame in pissing yourself like a goddamned fire hydrant when a trained killer is about to knife you in the throat."
"Can we change the subject?" Mars asked plaintively.
"Why don't you take the rest of your shift off and shiver in your bunk?" Kiva suggested. "In your shoes, that's what I'd do."
Mars motioned toward Chat.
"What are you going to do with him?"
"I'm going to encourage him to talk."
"That's not going to work.
You know nothing of my methods."
"He's trained not to talk.
He was also trained to kill him. Look how he fucked that up."
"I want to be there when you question him."
"No, you don't. I really do.
Let me put it another way, Lord Mars. Fuck you, go away."
"He almost killed me. I think I deserve to know why. And maybe I'll tell you later. But for now, if you don't fuck off right this second, I'm going to stab you myself. And none of these security guards are going to put a bolt into me. I guarantee you that."
Mars looked like he was going to say something else, then shook his head and walked off.
"Your people skills are admirable," Pintan said to Kiva.
"Fuck you, too," Kiva said.
Pintan smiled at that and pointed at Chat, secured and ready for transport.
"He's right, you know. This one's not going to talk. They're trained to resist aggressive questioning."
"Aggressive questioning?"
"That's the euphemism we use for torture in the Imperial Service, ma'am."
"Just fucking call it torture, then."
"My point is, he's been trained to deal with whatever humans can do to him."
"We can do better than humans," Kiva said.
"He's coming too," Pintan said sometime later.
"Turn on the speaker," Kiva said. Pintan pressed the button to open a channel.
"Good morning, fuckface," she said to Chat.
Chat looked at his surroundings. "Where am I?" he asked.
"You're in a service airlock, in an EVA suit," Kiva said.
"Well, most of one, anyway. You might have noticed you're missing a helmet."
"I noticed," Chat said.
"Good. So, this is the deal. You tell us everything we ask you questions about and don't give us any shit about it, and I don't purge you out the airlock without that fucking helmet."
Chat looked exasperated, confused, and tired.
"Look, I don't even know what's going on."
Kiva pressed the emergency purge command. The airlock door burst open, and Chat was sucked out into space.
"Well, that was quick," Pintan said.
"I told you, I don't fuck around," Kiva replied. She pressed the emergency retrieve button. The winch that held the cord attached to the EVA suit slammed into overdrive, reeling the suit back in, triple time.
"Anyway,
so how long can a human live in hard vacuum?"
"Maybe a minute, if he didn't hold his breath."
"He was talking," Kiva said. "He didn't have time to hold his breath." Less than a minute later, Chat was back inside the airlock, which was fully pressurized with an oxygen-rich mixture. A minute after that, Chat was awake, coughing and vomiting. He looked up at the airlock camera with hemorrhaged eyeballs. Pintan opened the communication circuit again.
"So, here's the deal," Kiva repeated. "You tell us everything we ask you questions about, and you don't give us any shit about it, and I don't purge you out of the airlock without that fucking helmet. I'm not going to repeat myself again. You fuck with me and you die. Got it?"
Chat croaked and nodded.
"Can you talk yet?"
Chat held up a gloved finger as if to say, "Give me a second."
"How about now?" Kiva asked 10 seconds later.
Chat looked up through bloodshot eyes with an expression that said, "You have to be fucking kidding me," but nodded. "You're Chat Ubdahl." Nod. "You came onto this ship under false pretenses." Nod. "You work for Greni Nohamapeeton." Nod. "Who sent you out on this ship?" Nod. "To kill Mars Claremont." Chat held up a hand and made a wriggling motion. Sorta. "What the fuck does that mean?" Chat tried to make words, stopped, swallowed, and tried again.
"Not primary goal," he managed to croak.
"What was your primary goal?"
"Take him alive."
"How the fuck were you going to take him alive? You can't leave the fucking ship." Chat looked at the airlock door, then back at the camera as if to say, "Oh, really? You can't leave the ship alive then, you enormous asshole."
"Pirates,"
Chat croaked. "Oh shit," Kiva said, looking over at Pintan.
"The pirates aren't coming for our cargo," Pintan said. "They're a shuttle service."
"But we could get away from the pirates," Kiva said, back to Chat. "Maybe." Chat shook his head.
"Bomb,"
he said.
"A bomb?"
Kiva was incredulous.
"You were going to put a fucking bomb on this ship?"
Chat nodded.
"How does blowing up the fucking ship serve your purpose?"
Chat shook his head and tried talking, but he was trying to make too many words and choked to a stop.
"Let me try," Pintan said, and leaned over so Chat could hear him. "You weren't going to blow up the ship, were you? You were just going to disrupt the ship's systems enough that it couldn't get into the flow."
Chat nodded and pointed to the camera as if to say, "You got it."
"That's why he was touring those particular corridors," Pintan said to Kiva. "He was looking for the right place to put the thing."
"And he didn't think we would notice? Blanika would space him the second he did that."
"We'd have to deal with the explosion and damage first. And then there would be pirates, and we'd be too busy to worry about him for a while. I suspect he intended to leave on the pirate ship, along with Claremont."
"How would he get a bomb on the fucking ship anyway? Don't we fucking screen for that?"
"It's probably not a big bomb," Pintan said. "He could probably make it on the ship."
Pintan leaned back over.
"And if we go through your personal effects, we're going to find bomb components disguised as toiletries and sundries, yes?"
Chat nodded.
"There you go," Pintan said.
"This motherfucker," Kiva said. "I want to space him just on principle."
"Microphone," Pintan said, pointing.
Kiva realized she was close enough to the open circuit that Chat heard that last comment. She looked at the screen to see him with a concerned expression on his face. She rolled her eyes and leaned in again.
"I'm not going to kill you, you miserable shit fuck, unless you stop talking, or croaking, or whatever the fuck it is you're doing at the moment. Just keep doing it."
Chat nodded. Kiva turned to Pintan. "Turn that thing off for a second." Pintan slapped closed the communication circuit.
"What is it?"
"Something's not right about this," Kiva said.
"None of it is right," Pintan said. "This is all highly fucked up, ma'am."
"No, I mean..." Kiva pointed to Chat, who was waiting, looking up at the camera. "He wants to bring Claremont back, and he's willing to damage the ship to do it. Greni is willing to deal with fucking pirates to bring him back."
"You said that Lord Greni tried holding him hostage to get those Imperial funds released. Maybe he just really needs them."
"Yeah, okay, but Shithole here," Kiva motioned again toward Chat, "tried to kill him once he realized he was trapped and found out. If he couldn't bring him back, he needed to kill him. But if he killed him, then he couldn't use him as a fucking hostage now, could he? So what was the fucking point? Why did Greni go through all this effort? What's the reason?"
"You got me," Pintan said.
"Yeah, open that circuit." Pintan turned it back on. "Important question, Chat. If I don't believe you, your lungs are coming out through your nose. You got it?" Chat nodded. "Why does your boss want Mars Claremont so fucking bad?"
"Don't know,"
Chat croaked. "Your fucking lungs, Chat."
"I don't know,"
Chat said, again, so emphatically that the last word came out as a wheeze.
I thought ransom, but makes no sense.
Because you were told to kill him if you couldn't bring him back alive. Chat nodded. Well, can't you fucking guess? Kiva asked. You work directly with Grenny. You have to have heard something. You have to be able to speculate. Chat shook his head.
Doesn't talk. Unless involved. Nothing.
You're involved, Chat.
To do. Not for why.
Kiva nodded to Pintan again, and he closed the circuit. Well, she asked him.
I think he's telling the truth.
I know the fucker is telling the truth, Kiva said. I want to know what you think we do now.
Well, we don't space him. Pintan pointed at Chat. He's been cooperative.
Hard vacuum will do that.
So he's not a problem anymore. But we still have the pirates on their way. And if Lord Grenny was willing to go this far to get Claremont back, then you have to figure he has a plan for if Chat here failed.
You mean the pirates are going to either come away with their prize or make sure he's dead?
Yes.
And if we all happen to die too, then that's just the way it goes.
Yes.
Well then shit, Pintan, Kiva said. She looked back to Chat. I guess we better give them what they want. Chapter 12. Marcus's tablet pinged with the command for him to report to Nubbed Pintan, the Yes Sir's head of security. He briefly considered not responding to the order, but then did anyway, moving through the ship with a gradually increasing awareness of and comfort with his surroundings. Because the ship was under acceleration at the moment, the ship's artificial gravity was more push fields than ring rotation, and Mars felt pressed down. But he noticed that it was bothering him less, even a couple of days in. A body could get used to it, it seemed. Nubbed Pintan was in the Yes Sir's brig, a small and unhappy room with even smaller and more unhappy cells, inside one of which was Chat Ubdahl. Mars looked in at Chat, who looked back, balefully.
He's a mess, Mars said.
Yes, well, Lady Kiva tossed him out an airlock, Pintan answered.
You threw him into space?
Yep.
And he didn't die?
We only threw him out a little bit.
Mars looked again at Chat, whose eyeballs looked spray-painted red. I almost feel sorry for him.
Don't get too broken up, Lord Mars. He'd still murder you if he had a chance.
You asked to see me, sir, Mars said, turning away from Chat.
I did. I needed to get a good look at you.
All right. Why?
We're being tailed by pirates. Your would-be assassin here tells us that their plan is to take you off the ship. We suspect that, if they can't manage that, they'd rather destroy the Yes Sir than let you escape. We could fight them, but if their goal is to blow us up rather than board us, then our options are limited.
Are you planning to turn me over?
If I were planning that, I wouldn't be talking to you. I would have had you stunned when you weren't looking, and then prepped you for delivery.
Good to know. Pintan nodded.
What I need from you is your willingness to help us save ourselves and save you, and, in the process, maybe cause a little pain to these pirates and the people behind them.
You mean Grenny Nohama Peaton?
Yes, that's the one.
I'm in.
It won't be entirely risk-free for you.
I don't care. I'm in.
Good.
How do we do this? Pintan pointed to Chat.
The first thing we do is make it look like this one was successful.
In killing me?
In planting a bomb that was meant to keep us from entering the flow. Once we do that, we're pretty sure the pirates are going to hail us and discuss their terms.
What's the second thing? Mars asked.
Well, Pintan said, have you noticed that you and Chat here are roughly the same size and coloration?
Not really, no.
Well, I have.
The fake bomb went off a half hour later, and the Yes Sir sent a general unencrypted distress call toward Imperial Station to let it know of its predicament. The idea would be to make the station aware an event happened, and that the station should prep rescue and retrieval efforts to be deployed if and when the Yes Sir followed up with an even more dire distress call. The drawback was that even the fastest Imperial cutters would be more than a day out. The Yes Sir was alone, save for the one small ship trailing it, now only a few hours out from intercept. Which hailed the Yes Sir, as expected, shortly after the distress call went out.
"Free Fighter Red Rose hailing Yes Sir, that's my baby," the hail said.
Mars heard it on the bridge, where he and Kiva Lagos stood in a corner, staying out of the way but needing to hear what happened next.
"Lagos Fiver, Yes Sir, that's my baby, responding," said Drian Musan, Yes Sir's communications officer.
"We understand you're experiencing an event. Permission to come aside and assist."
"The captain thanks you for your willingness to assist, but says no assistance is required at this time. Please maintain current distance."
"We are concerned that should a further event occur, we would not be able to properly assist. Moving to come alongside."
"Red Rose, the captain once again thanks you, but wishes to inform you that our concern for the well-being of your ship in the event of a further incident compels us to again request you maintain your current distance."
"We thank your captain for the concern, but feel the risk is worth taking. Moving to assist."
"That's enough foreplay," Blanika said to Musan.
"Yes, sir,"
Musan said, then turned back to her console.
"Red Rose, Captain Blanika formally requests we cut the shit and just get to it."
There was a pause.
"Copy that," came the response a moment later. "Please stand by."
Blanika turned to Kiva Lagos. "How are we on preparations?"
"Busy as the proverbial fucking bee," Kiva said.
Blanika nodded, glanced at Mars, and then turned his attention back to his command screen. In spite of everything, Mars was thrilled. It was his first time on a command deck of any sort, and the calm professionalism of the Yes Sir bridge crew in the face of what could reasonably be considered enemy action was inspiring. These were good people, Mars decided, except possibly for Kiva Lagos. He hadn't quite gotten a bead on her yet. He looked over at Lady Kiva, whose current expression could be read as intent or condescending smugness, depending on one's own personal inclinations. Every experience Mars had of her was of someone one did not want to mess with. She reminded him of Vrenna that way, albeit with less of an actual conscience.
"What are you smirking about?" Kiva asked him.
She'd caught him glancing at her.
"I was just thinking about you spacing chat," Mars replied, lying.
"What about it?"
"I was wondering if you would have spaced him for good if he hadn't talked."
"Hell yes! Motherfucker was going to set off a bomb on my ship," Kiva said. "You don't fuck with my ship. You don't fuck with my people."
"I'm a crew member now," Mars said. "That means I'm one of your people too.
And we're not going to give you up now, are we?"
"Hopefully not." Kiva nodded.
"So there you go. Don't be a dick about it, Claremont."
Mars grinned at this. The communication channel between ships crackled open again.
"This is Captain Winsome of the Red Rose asking for direct parley with Captain Blanika of the Yes Sir."
Blanika slapped open his personal circuit.
"Blanika here. I understand you wish to cut the shit, Captain."
"If that's all right with you, Captain."
"It certainly is. Why not be civilized about it? By now, you've figured out what we are."
"You're pirates. You've been tracking us for most of a day."
"Correct. And by now you realize that one of our associates has disabled your ability to enter the flow."
"Affirmative."
"However, today is your lucky day, Captain. We are willing to leave you your cargo and stay out of your way while you either repair your ship or turn back to Imperial Station. All we need from you is to deliver two people to us."
"Who are those people?"
The first is our associate, the one who planted the bomb, who I'm sure you probably now have sitting in the brig. The second is a passenger, Lord Marse Claremont.
Captain, we can't turn over your associate.
Can't is a very strong word, Captain.
Let me amend. We can turn him over, just in very small pieces. He appears to have mistimed his bomb. He went up with it.
That's unfortunate.
If you want, we can scrape the walls and hand him over in a bag.
Thank you, no. His retrieval was optional. Lord Marse's, however, is not.
Our passenger manifest has no Marse Claremont, Lord or otherwise.
I thought we agreed to cut the shit, Captain. Marse Claremont is currently on your ship under the name of Christian Jansen, which is an identity the House of Lagos uses when it wants to smuggle someone off system. You might want to inform your employers that they should change up their house identities more often than they do. You do have a Christian Jansen on board, yes?
Yes, we do.
Good.
But there's a problem.
Captain Blanica, I regret to inform you that if the problem is Claremont is also in small pieces, I'm going to be required to do the same to your ship.
What does that mean?
That means that I either get Claremont alive or make the yes sir dead. Those are your options.
We would take you with us, Blanica said.
No, you wouldn't. Now, what is the problem with Claremont?
He's not dead, but he is currently in a medically induced coma.
Why?
Because he was in the corridor with your associate when the bomb went off. He and several other crew members were trying to interrupt your friend. He survived. Two other crew members didn't.
Condolences, Captain.
You just threatened to destroy my ship and kill my entire crew, Captain. Your condolences are hollow.
Understood. Can Claremont travel?
We can hand him off to you alive and stable. Everything else is up to you.
Agreed. We will come alongside in 3.5 hours. We'll have a shuttle ready to transfer him.
No, we'll send a shuttle to you.
Captain, none of you are setting foot on my ship.
You want him? Fine, I'll give him to you. But we're coming to you.
Then I want you on the shuttle for the handoff. As assurance, you're not sending a shuttle-sized bomb.
Not me, Blanica said. I'll send the owner's representative instead. That will suit your purpose.
And a medical staffer. They stay on the shuttle. You send in your own people to take Claremont out of it.
Everything done in 10 minutes maximum. Any longer, and we're going down together, whether you believe it or not.
Done. We'll inform you when we're ready to receive you. Red Rose out.
The connection was cut.
Thanks for volunteering, the asshole, Kiva said as soon as the connection was wiped.
The ship is underway, Blanica said. I'm in command now, Lady Kiva, and I need you to do this thing. So shut up and do it, ma'am.
Fine, she pointed at Marse. And you're coming with me. Congratulations, you just got promoted to the medical staff.
She looked over at Blanica. Okay?
Blanica nodded.
I don't think this is a good idea, Marse said.
You don't get a vote, and you also told Pintan you were willing to help. Stop whining like a fucking child.
You could have just said, I need your help.
All right, I need your help. Stop whining like a fucking child.
That's not better.
Where's your Christian costume?
I threw it away.
Well, go dig it out, and then go to the medical bay. We have things to do.
Hold out your thumb, the Red Rose medical technician said to Kiva.
The fuck you say, Kiva replied.
The technician sighed, turned away, and called out the open ramp of the shuttle. A Red Rose crew member with a bolt thrower strode on the shuttle ramp.
Hold out your thumb or Sax here will blow your head off, the medical technician said.
Kiva held out her thumb. The technician jabbed it. Then she did a retinal scan.
You're Lady Kiva Lagos, she said.
How the fuck did you get our personnel database? Kiva asked the technician.
The technician ignored her and went over to Marse.
Thumb, she said. Marse offered it.
Gustine Obrecht, she said. She went over to the body on the medical gurney. For that one, she checked the thumb and the retina and drew blood from a vein in the right arm. Mars watched that final test and waited for the result. Mars Claremont, she confirmed. And then Sachs called to another Red Rose crew person who came on board and whisked the gurney away. The medical technician nodded to Kiva and Mars and turned. Hey, Kiva said. The technician turned back and Kiva reached over and grabbed a small rucksack. The rucksack Mars brought on to the yes sir, in fact, and held it out to the technician. What is that? The technician asked. What he brought onto the ship with him, some toiletries and sundries. He might want to shave once he regains consciousness, Mars added. The technician took the rucksack, nodded to the two of them, and then walked out of the shuttle. Let's button this thing up and get the fuck out of here, Kiva said. Agreed, Mars said. Kiva pounded on the door of the pilot compartment to signal the transfer had been made. Were you nervous? Mars asked Kiva as the shuttle headed back to the yes, sir. About what? About the transfer. About them checking Chat's body for my genetics. No, Kiva said. The thumb pad and the contacts we made from your scrapings are the same quality as we get for our fake identities. Our medical facilities are top-notch like that. Mars nodded and then winced a little bit, remembering the corneal scraping he endured to get the seed material for the contacts overlaid onto Chat's eyes. The contacts were fast-grown, as was the thumb pad, which ran the risk of genetic anomalies that would give them away. They got lucky. I was thinking of the blood draw. Kiva shrugged. It was your blood. Sucked out of you, clipped off the major vessels in his arms, drained that blood, put yours in. It's not complicated. I didn't know if the shunts would hold. They'll dissolve soon and his normal blood flow will come back. If he's lucky, his muscles won't be necrotic and he'll be able to keep his arms. And if he's not lucky? If he's not lucky, then fuck him. He tried to put a bomb in my ship. And kill me, Mars reminded her. Right, Kiva said. What if it hadn't worked? You mean what if they figured out that was Chat on the gurney while we were still there? Yes. I had a backup plan. What, run? No. I'd give them you. What? Mars looked at Kiva, shocked. Kiva looked back. Don't look at me like that. Why do you think I had you go? Because I like your company? I thought I was one of your people now. Yeah, but you're new, Kiva said, and there were a whole lot of other people to think about. Mars didn't say anything else to Kiva for the short remainder of the journey. As they exited the shuttle on the Yes Sir and the ship accelerated away from the Red Rose, Mars received a ping on his tablet, a forwarded message from Frenna. Tracked down that thing you asked. Sho Tinuin heard the rumor from a friend who works for the House of Nohama Peton. Says the Nohama Petons have been paying for navigational data from ships for the last couple of years. It sounds like maybe they're seeing some of the same things we see. I don't know what that means for us, but I don't think it means anything good. Be careful out there. Miss you already. V. Kiva tapped Mars on the shoulder. He looked up from his tablet. Come with me, she said. I'm tired, Mars said, putting his tablet away. Do you honestly think you're going to sleep until we're in the flow and these pirates are well fucking behind us? Come on. She walked out of the shuttle bay. Mars stared after her and followed. Presently, they came to Kiva's cabin. Mars entered and was immediately jealous. You have a room the size of a room, he said to Kiva, who had entered the room behind him. He stared at the immense expanse of the wall in front of him, which featured schedules, notes, and personal photos. Of course I do, Kiva said. My family owns the ship. I'm the owner's representative. You think they're going to put me in a fucking bunk? No, I suppose not. It's just funny. It's not that funny. Says the woman who doesn't sleep in a bunk the size of a coffin. Well, you won't be sleeping there tonight anyway. What? Mars turned and Kiva was entirely undressed. Let's get laid, she said to Mars. Okay, Mars said, and then paused. No,
Hold on. I'm confused. You've had sex before, yes?
Mars nodded.
With women?
He nodded again.
And you liked it?
Yes.
Then what's to be confused about? She asked, coming up to him.
I don't think you actually like me, Mars said.
I like you just fine. She grabbed his waistband and worked the uniform tab there. You were willing to give me up to the pirates if you had to, 10 minutes ago.
Yes, and
you tell me to shut the fuck up nearly every time we talk.
I tell everyone that.
I mean, look, we've both had a stressful day, Kiva said, and pulled down his uniform trousers. Now, you could stand around trying to talk to me about all the things that didn't happen, in which case I toss your ass out and you go back to your tiny bunk and smell your own farts until you fall asleep, or you can shut the fuck up, get naked with me, and then we bang each other until we collapse from exhaustion. It's your choice, but if I were you, I know what I would rather do. So, are we gonna fuck or what?
This is your idea of romance, isn't it? Mars asked Kiva.
Basically, Kiva said, and then dragged him onto the bed. A few hours later, as Marsh dozed with Kiva nestled up against him, a long, mellow ping reverberated throughout the ship.
Hmm, Kiva said and opened up her eyes.
What was that? Marsh asked.
It's the signal that we've entered the flow.
So we're safe. Nothing is safe in the flow. If our bubble collapses, we cease to exist.
I mean, we don't have to worry about pirates or Grenny Nohamapeton, Mars said. He was aware of Kiva's body next to his and felt an erection pop up almost instantly.
Kiva felt it too and shifted her body on top of his, reached down to position Mars where she wanted him, and then pushed herself onto him.
No, you don't have to worry about pirates or the fucking Nohamapetons, she said, working herself on him. You might have to worry about me, though.
Mars smiled at this.
If this is what I have to worry about, I think I can handle it.
This isn't what you have to worry about.
Then what are you talking about?
I'm talking about whatever it is that Granny Nohamapeton was fucking willing to kill you over, Mars.
Wait, Mars said. Are we having an actual conversation?
Now?
He started to prop himself up.
Kiva pushed him back down.
Yes, we're having an actual conversation right now, she said, increasing her pace.
I can fucking do both. Here's the thing. You're going to tell me whatever it is you're not telling me. You're going to tell me why you're on the ship. You're going to tell me why you're going to Hub. You're going to tell me why Granny Nohamapeton wants you dead. You're going to tell me, or I'm going to rip out your fucking heart.
When did you want me to tell you? Mars asked.
Give me just a minute, Kiva said.
Interlude. Granny Nohamapeton was not having a very good day. Point one. The yes sir, that's my baby had managed to make it into the flow, despite reporting damage to its engineering systems from the bomb Chat Ubdahl had, by all reports, successfully planted, also allegedly blowing himself up in the process. Reports of Chat's demise had given Granny a slight twinge. Chat had been one of his more useful people, which is why Granny had used him for this particular and delicate mission. On the other hand, now Granny wouldn't have to pay out Chat's completion bonus, which would have been considerable. So that was the one silver lining on this particular mess. Point two, not that Chat would have gotten that bonus anyway, come to think of it, because he failed to do what he was supposed to, deliver or kill Mars Claremont. Granny had thought he'd managed the latter, despite blowing himself up when the Red Rose messaged that they had taken delivery of Claremont, albeit in a damaged state, and that various tests confirmed Claremont's identity. But then, more than an hour later, a message from the Red Rose. Claremont out of coma and screaming that he is not Claremont, but your Lieutenant Chat Ubdahl, is in considerable pain, particularly in his limbs. Followed by, confirmed Claremont is in fact not Claremont but Ubdahl, tricked our scans with contacts and thumb pad and blood replacement in arms. Last serious, may cause permanent damage. Followed by, Ubdahl mostly not coherent, but says did not plant the bomb, and yes sir is fully operational. Moving to intercept and destroy per agreement. Followed by, fucking hell, those assholes took your fucking bomb and got it on our fucking ship, what the actual fuck? Followed, rather some time later, by, bomb Ubdahl was to plant on yes sir exploded on our ship, causing operational damage. Could not move to intercept and destroy. Captain Wimson, unhappy Ubdahl's bomb came onto our ship. Sent Ubdahl out the airlock in his medical gurney. Specific message for you from Captain. You owe us double for damages and triple for guns now. You pay off damages first. Also, says fuck you and your incompetent fucking minions. Point 3. Grenny now didn't have the weapons he wanted, which annoyed him. The weapons were part of a shipment authorized by the Parliament and the Emperor to help the Duke fight his little rebellion. The House of Nohama-Peton had been instrumental in helping get the resolution for the weapons passed in Parliament. Grenny had been instrumental in arranging for the weapons to be pirated. That part, at least, went to plan. But then Captain Wimson decided to hold on to the weapons and told Grenny to pay more to take delivery. This was upsetting to Grenny, as aside from the principle of the thing, he'd already funded their acquisition out of House Nohama-Peton funds and found himself, rather unfortunately, illiquid. His plan to fund their reacquisition out of imperial funds hit a snag when the Count of Claremont decided to have ethics, then hit another snag when Mars Claremont's kidnapping also failed to produce results. The new plan had been to reacquire Mars Claremont or destroy the Yes Sir. The former would optimally yield the Count of Claremont's cooperation. The latter, while far less optimal because it would exacerbate the already bad blood between the houses of Nohama-Peton and Lagos if his hand in it ever came to light, would allow Grenny to convince the Duke to acquire the substantial funds the local Lagos offices would receive from local offices of the House of Aiello, who held the monopoly on insurance. From there, he'd skim enough to cover the weapons. But now, the Yes Sir was gone, and Mars Claremont with it, and the price of the weapons had not only gone up, but now there was another debt in front of it he'd have to deal with. Point 4. And, while at one point, maybe Grenny could have stiffed the Red Rose on the weapons, they were the ones who reneged on the original deal, that was their risk, there was no way he couldn't repay the damages to the pirate ship. They'd fucking kill him, and slowly. Neither his noble title, nor his proximity to the Duke, nor his own security people would keep them from coming to get him. So he'd at least need to get the money for that soon. Grenny briefly considered trying to track down Vrenna Claremont for her hostage value, but then just as quickly dismissed it out of mind because... Point 5. Vrenna Claremont was utterly impossible to find. She'd gone to ground, but not before sending Grenny a note from her personal address, which read, in its entirety, "Don't sleep in the same bed twice." Grenny had read Vrenna Claremont's service history. He was aware this was not at all an idle threat. Which brought him to... Point 6. The call he'd gotten from Sir Ontain Mount, operations chief of N's Imperial Station, which started without preamble. "What the hell is this I'm hearing about you kidnapping Mars Claremont?" "I don't know what you're talking about, sir," Grenny said. "Really?" "Of course. That's a very serious allegation. I'd like to know who is slandering me."
"Reputable sources, Lord Grenny."
"It's ludicrous. For one thing, as I understand it, Mars Claremont has left End. on the Yes, Sir, That's My Baby. This would be the ship my Marines tell me was tracked and almost attacked by a privateer just a few hours ago, Mount said.
I couldn't say, Grenny replied. I have no knowledge of these things. We're rather busy enough down here, sir.
Your Duke's not doing very well at the moment, is he?
We've had setbacks, but nothing we can't handle.
You're not making a convincing case for the last part, Lord Grenny, Mount said.
The assistance of the Emperor's Marines would be appreciated, Grenny suggested.
I'll repeat what I tell you every time you hint, which is that the interdependency considers this an entirely local matter.
Excepting the arms Parliament authorized.
For use by the Duke's troops, not mine.
A distinction perhaps without a difference.
There's a difference to me, which is what matters. Either your Duke will take care of this problem, or soon, some rebel or another will petition me to be the new Duke when all your nonsense is over.
And what will you do then?
I suppose that might depend on whether the current Duke's head is still on his shoulders. Until then, a friendly admonition, Lord Grenny. The Count of Clermont and his family and his lands are under the Emperor's protection, which means they are under my protection. If I hear any more rumors of you interfering with them, either at the behest of the Duke or under your initiative, I promise that you will see what imperial intervention looks like, and you will not be happy about it. Are we clear?
They were clear.
And then there was point 7. Which was the coded note Grenny had received from General Livy Onston, leader of the rebellion, which read,
Where are those weapons?
You said you would have them to us by now. We undertook this last offensive on the basis of you getting those to us. We have our asses hanging out here. If we don't get them soon, or if the Duke's troops get them instead of us, we're in real trouble. Remember what I told you when we started this on your behalf. You're in this with us. We rise, you rise. We fall, you fall. If we fall because of you, you will fall so much harder.
L.O. Why is everyone threatening me today?
Grenny asked himself. Well, and the answer to that was because he'd over-leveraged himself and his house and all their assets on end in order to topple the current Duke and install himself as the Duke of End. He'd over-leveraged himself, and now all his precisely timed, precisely laid plans were on the verge of teetering over and collapsing.
This is what happens when you risk it all, Grenny thought. It's never going to run smoothly.
True enough, but it shouldn't be this rough. Not now, not all of a sudden. At least the Duke of End wasn't yelling at him. His tablet pinged. It was the Duke calling.
You're kidnapping nobles now? He yelled.
Grenny smiled grimly in spite of himself. That's not quite how it happened, Your Grace.
Don't Your Grace me, Grenny. I just got an earload from Sir Ontaine about it. Says you grabbed young Lord Marse Clermont right off the street in front of his apartment.
That's a bit of an exaggeration. I asked Lord Marse to meet with me in order to see if I could get him to convince his father to be more active in defending End.
What did he say?
He said he was leaving the planet within hours and was not in a position to plead our case.
How did Sir Ontaine get kidnapping out of that?
I may have been slightly overzealous in trying to convince Lord Marse to assist us. The conversation became heated. The rest of it is our enemies exaggerating, and that exaggeration getting back to the Count of Clermont, and, I imagine, him complaining to Sir Ontaine, and then him complaining to you.
He did the same to me, sir, just a few moments ago.
What did you tell him?